Chapter 10, A Company of Owners. Most people pay their people minimum wage or whatever and let it go at that. At SRC, we give people equity as well, because we're in a business to achieve our dreams, and we want them to achieve theirs. And all of us have a better shot at succeeding if everyone is a stockholder. The fact is, you can accumulate more wealth by sharing equity than by keeping it all to yourself. SRC stock is worth what it is today because of everything the people here have accomplished. No way could we have accomplished as much if I and the other members of the buyout group had held on to all the stock for themselves. That's because a company of owners will outperform a company of employees any day of the week. We do everything we can to instill the habits of ownership in people, to encourage them to think and act like owners. When you think and act like an owner, you do all the little things necessary to win. You make the extra phone call to make sure that the customer is happy. You figure out how to slice an additional 25 cents from the cost of a part. You can spend money on the sales presentation, not on the hotel room or the rented car. You wipe the grease spot off the product before you put it in the box and ship it. But people will only think like owners if they have a larger purpose, if they are not just working for a paycheck. You can't turn employees into owners simply by letting them choose their hours or paint their work areas, as some management gurus seem to think. That's a start, but it's not nearly enough. People have to see the big picture. They have to know what they are doing, why it's important, where they are going, and how business is going to help them get there. Only then will they have the desire to go out and use the tools you provide and play the great game of business to win. Equity is the fifth tool in our great game kit. It is the means by which the company delivers on the promise of the other four: the standards, the bonus program, the annual game plan, and the communication process centered around the Great Huddle. With those four tools, people can steadily increase the value of the company and have fun in the process. They can win every day by beating their standards. They can win every week by improving their overall score. They can win every quarter and earn cash rewards under the bonus program. They can win every year and protect their jobs by hitting the targets in the annual plan. But the big win comes from playing the equity game. For every dollar we make in after-tax profits, our stock value goes up by about $10. That's real money. When people leave, we purchase any SRC stock they own, and they cash in their shares in the ESOP. Equity can provide the greatest expansion of wealth most people will ever see. It's like hitting an oil field. I can't think of any other game that offers the same odds and a comparable payoff, and I've played a lot of games. I've put money on just about every event you can bet on. This is the best deal around, hands down, because you can influence the result. You can pretty much determine whether or not you win. Who invented this game of capitalism? I sure didn't. It was here long before I came. I'm teaching other people how to play it, showing them what an incredible game this really is. When you hit the equity jackpot, you can do more than pay your bills. You can actually achieve some of your dreams. The opportunity is there. If you take it, you can create a better life for yourself and your family. That's the best reason I know for playing the great game of business. It's the message we're constantly sending out to the people who work at SRC. Equity makes the message real. This is the point in the story at which I lose many business owners. They like everything about the great game business up to the part about sharing equity. It's also a problem for people who run companies they don't own or work in divisions of larger companies and who simply don't have the access to equity as a tool. They ask me, can you play the great game of business without equity participation? Will the other techniques work if people don't own stock? Can you get people to think and act like owners even though they are not owners in fact? The answers are all yes. You can set standards, put together a bonus program, come up with a game plan, and get the chatter going through something like our huddling system. People will respond. They will learn. They will get caught up in the action and start figuring out ways to make money and generate cash. I know of companies where all that happens. Most of them have done extremely well, even though employees don't own any stock. But unless you bring people in as real owners, you'll never complete their education. You'll stop short of the most important lesson. You will show them the rainbow, but not how to get to the end of it. Equity is the basis for all long-term thinking. It is the best reason for staying the course, for sacrificing instant gratification, and going after the big payoff down the road. If you have equity and understand it, you know why it's important to build for the future. You can make the long-term decisions. You still pay attention to the day-to-day details, but you're doing it for the right reason, because it's the best way to achieve lasting success. Companies that don't share equity are making a mistake. They're leaving up a barrier that should be taken down. They're setting limits on how far people can go. When you come right down to it, they are shortchanging their employees, but they're also shortchanging themselves, because equity just happens to be one of the biggest management bargains around. There are three common arguments against equity participation. I often hear them from people who have given stock to employees and live to regret it. For that reason alone, they deserve to be addressed. The case against equity sharing, number one. People don't appreciate it. This is the complaint I hear most often from the company owners who have had bad experience with equity participation. They're right. Employees don't appreciate stock. If you don't educate them about business, you can't get people to think and act like owners by putting pieces of paper in their hands. Your employees may say they want stock. They may even demand it. A lot of people confuse equity with gold, thanks to some of the myths that grew up in the 1980s. But equity won't serve as a motivator if people don't know how they can affect this value. They may even get angry and cynical when it doesn't miraculously make them rich. Then you will rule the day you let them have it. Ownership comes with responsibilities. People have to know what they are. The case against equity sharing, number two. Let people invest the money for themselves. Some people argue against equity participation by proposing an alternative. An ESOP is basically an investment vehicle, they say. So why not give employees the money you would put in the ESOP and let them invest it as they please? Pay them bigger bonuses. Set up a 401k plan, which allows them to put off paying taxes on the money until it's withdrawn. If they're hot on equity, they can buy the stock of the other companies. They can diversify. They can invest in all other kinds of securities. When you give people money instead of stock, you give them independence, control, and safety. You let them follow the first rule of prudent investing. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. It's an interesting argument, but it misses the point. The real question overall is whether or not people can invest in the stock of the company where they work. An ESOP is just not an investment vehicle, any more than a home is just a place to stay. When people invest in other companies, they are looking for a good return. When they invest in themselves, they are making a commitment. They are changing their relationship to their work. They are going for the pot at the end of the rainbow. Besides, you probably can't afford to give them as much money as they stand to make on the equity in the company. You would be paying them in ordinary dollars, after all, drawn out of the company's earnings. Equity dollars are considerably more potent, thanks to the power of the multiplier. If you try to pay that kind of money out of earnings, you'll bankrupt the company in no time. The case against equity sharing, number three, it divides the company. There's an argument that equity promotes factionalism. Those who want to go public line up against those who want to be acquired, and both groups are against those who maintain the status quo. Conflicts of interest arise. People get confused about their responsibilities. Managers don't make good owners, and owners don't make good managers, or so the argument goes. There's a kernel of truth to it. Equity occasionally does go to somebody's head. We had one manager with a lot of stock who acted as though this was his plantation, and the employees were his slaves. Eventually, he pushed it too far and had to leave. But the problems almost always come down to the individuals involved. Equity isn't the issue, it's the excuse. In fact, I've generally found that equity has the opposite effect, allowing people to put pettiness aside and see the big picture. It helps you take the anger out of the conflicts that arise in any business. Without equity, it's easy to get caught up in petty disagreements. With equity, you can say, hey, wake up and smell the roses. These conflicts are really pretty insignificant. Let's look at the whole. Look at what you're giving up if you don't work this out. How to share equity. If you decide to share equity, there are only so many ways to go about it, and each of them is highly regulated. When we started out, we thought we'd give shares to everybody who came to work at SRC. Then we discovered we can only do that if we went through the process of going public, which would have cost us more money than we had at the time and might have opened us up to challenges we weren't prepared to handle. For example, what if a competitor decided to acquire us in a hostile takeover at some point? So we stayed private and looked for other ways to let people acquire an ownership stake. Some of the best resources on learning more about employee ownership: contact the National Center for Employee Ownership, the NCEO, at nceo.org. The year we voted not to pay ourselves a Christmas bonus. The test of an education comes when you have to make real-life choices based on what you've learned. We faced one of those moments at the beginning of November 1989, when people had to decide between protecting their equity and paying themselves a Christmas bonus. We had already missed the first quarter and the second quarter bonuses, which wasn't all that unusual. If you choose good targets, it often takes 6 months to start hitting them. Then at the end of October, it became clear that we're going to miss the third quarter bonus after all, for the first time ever. The third quarter bonus is paid out at the end of November, just in time for Christmas shopping. So people were understandably upset about losing it. What made the situation even hairier is that we're off by only 0.1% in the current ratio. The supervisors got together and requested a meeting with me. There was grumbling on the shop floor. People had been working very hard all year, coping with some new business that had come in unexpectedly. The supervisors had been cheering them on, encouraging them to go for the bonus. But there wasn't any bonus. What were the supervisors supposed to do? How could they keep people pumped up for the rest of the year? I heard them out. I said, "I understand what you're saying, and I am as interested in morale and motivation as you are. We can go ahead and pay the bonus if you want to. There's a real good chance we're going to hit it in the fourth quarter anyways. So we can just advance the payout from February to November and let people have the money in time for Christmas. But you and your people should think carefully before you accept this offer. If we don't hit our targets in the fourth quarter for some reason, we're going to be out of the money we've already paid. That money has to come from somewhere. In fact, it will come out of profits. If that happens, our stock value won't go up as much as it should this year. And remember, every dollar in after-tax profits is worth $10 in stock value. So it's your choice. We can pay the bonus now, or we can wait until we earned it. You decide." For the next week, there was an intense debate going on throughout the entire company. It took the production chief half an hour to make the five-minute walk across the shop floor to his office every day. People kept stopping him to ask what he thought and to get help in evaluating the numbers. Everybody was trying to calculate the likelihood of hitting the targets in the fourth quarter. When I got back together with the supervisors a week later, I asked them what they decided. They told me that they had conducted a straw poll. About 40% of the people wanted to get the bonus. They were mainly the younger workers who had not been in the company long enough to acquire much equity. The other 60% preferred to wait until the bonus was earned. "So what's your decision?" I asked. They wanted me to decide. I said, "No way. You're the ones who are going to have to live with the consequences." They voted overwhelmingly against the bonus. As it turned out, we missed the bonus again in the fourth quarter by 0.1%. So I had another morale problem. I went back to the staff and said, "Okay, I know you're good, and I can't walk away from the fact you've put in four solid quarters without getting a bonus. So what we'll do is keep the old bonus program going." It was the first time in 7 years that we kept the goals from 1 year to the next. But this one had a higher level. People needed a win. We had to let them prove how good they were, and they pulled away in the first quarter of 1990. What is democracy in business? We run SRC with a lot of participation, but it's not a democracy in the political sense of the word. A political democracy derives its authority from the consent of the governed. A company derives its authority from the consent of the marketplace. The people who work for a company may think it's just terrific, but they'll have to work somewhere else if the company doesn't make money or runs out of cash. So the market tells us what a lot of our decisions have to be. Often the trick is to recognize what it's saying. Nevertheless, there are more possibilities for democracy in business than people realize. Instead, they allow themselves to be manipulated. I mean, people who own stock in public companies have power they never use. Why they don't use it, I have no idea. There's a tremendous gap between the power they have and what they do. Why do so few shareholders exercise that power? There has never been a really important decision in this company that hasn't been by acclamation, if not unanimous. Every major decision is talked through in advance. People are asked to contribute, to say whatever they think. Do you want to bring everyone in as shareholders? Do we want to grow? Do we want to decentralize? When we began thinking about decentralization, we talked to everybody in the company. I have folders of notes from the meetings we held. First, I went to the supervisors. Then we went to the entire workforce to find out what they wanted. We took their wants to the management team, and we tried to figure out how we could afford them. Out of all those discussions came the plan to decentralize. In business, it's the head of the company who decides how the company is going to be run. And I have decided to use a democratic process. I ask people to contribute, to vote, to participate, to have input. I have a lot of trust in that process. I'm trying to find a system that is simple, that people can understand, that they can follow. I want to give them a game plan that allows them to make their own decisions. I want them to see how their decisions fit into the overall puzzle. So you have to educate them first. Without education, you don't have democracy. All you have is manipulation. There is no democratic process if people don't have any idea what you're talking about. The better educated people are, the more democratic you can be, and the better it will work. At a certain point, growth becomes an obstacle to democracy because you have to keep bringing new people up to speed. That may involve keeping the others on hold, saying, wait a while till these guys catch up. That's a problem we've struggled with. It was one of the reasons we began to set up subsidiaries. If we created smaller businesses, we can let them take the message to the people. Small businesses can communicate quicker and better. And when you're operating on a small scale, you have more time. Whereas when you're operating on a large scale, the problems all get magnified. Back at the time of the American Revolution, Thomas Paine called his pamphlet Common Sense because he thought democracy was a matter of common sense. I feel the same way. The way I run this company is just plain common sense. It's the fairest way of doing things. There are so many unfair things in the world. Why not create an environment where at least you can try to make things fair? This system works. That's why you use it. I don't know of any way to have a more successful company. It works because it gets people to contribute, to participate, to learn and grow. Democracy doesn't work well if people don't participate. The only problem with the political democracy we have in the United States is that not enough of us contribute. At SRC, we get people to contribute by telling them the truth about the business. We try to appeal to their brains to show that if they contribute, they'll get something back. That's where equity is an important tool.